Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome to episode 619 with my return guest, Neil Brennan. I am Paul Gilmartin. This is the Mental Illness Happy Hour, a place for nuttiness. I am not a therapist. I really enjoyed the conversation you guys are going to hear with Neil Brennan. Neil is a fellow comedian, very funny comic. He has a new special out right now called Blocks that I highly recommend checking out. I also enjoyed his previous special, which was called Three Mics. It is Thanksgiving as I am recording this, the night of Thanksgiving. And I took a little time today to, as I do every Thanksgiving, I try to slow down and remember what I am thankful for. And I just had a really nice conversation with my girlfriend this afternoon, where we just talked about how grateful we were for each other and the relationship that we have, and how safe we feel with each other, and how much we trust each other, and how there's no drama, and I think it is so easy, especially when it comes to our careers and stuff like that, or our material possessions, to forget to celebrate the things that we already have. And I tried to do that today as well, to remind myself how lucky and grateful I am to be able to live in a home in Southern California, where it's I got in before it got crazy. And I try to remember that instead of saying, am I going to live in a metropolis the rest of my life? Am I going to work till the day I drop, blah, 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 and go into the headspace? And I felt such a relief after the conversation with my girlfriend, and after just kind of looking around me and saying, wow, I have a lot to be proud of and a lot to be grateful for. And I like to do that once a year, and the rest of it's a shit show, and fuck everybody. So there we are. And I'm just quoting the Pilgrims. I'm interpreting what they said. I do kind of miss that style of rifle, though, with the blunderbuss, with the big trumpet end of the gun. What was the purpose of that? Let's, right at the very end of the gun, let's get rid of all accuracy and just see what happens. Or maybe if we run out of a coronet on the battlefield, somebody can blow into a rifle and get little taps going. All right. This episode and this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. I've been using BetterHelp for 6 years, and you know, our brains and our lives don't come with owner's manuals. And for me, therapy is the closest thing that I can get to an owner's manual for my brain, running stuff by my therapist, you know, getting her objective input on things, and especially helping hear the ridiculous things come out of my mouth when I tell her the things that I say to myself. And that's helpful for me. So as the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% online, plus it's affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. If things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. It couldn't be simpler. No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the right therapist. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/mental. That's BetterHelp.com/. Wow, a little going great right till the end. BetterHelp. That's BetterHelp.com/mental. And we're not doing any surveys today. It's Thanksgiving. I got to cut loose, huh? Gravy and laziness. So we're gonna dive right into that conversation with Neil Brennan, and away we go.
Your fear of death is your love of life in reverse.
I'm a kinky person.
I didn't want to be.
I'm ashamed.
A sexual being.
Deeply ashamed.
You are.
I want to live.
Fucking depressed.
But how?
I can't do this anymore.
I will be uncomfortable so you will be comfortable.
Is life just a series of perpetual losses?
You're not depressed. We're black.
There is no real chance for intimacy.
We don't do that.
Without risking being hurt.
Push it all down.
You can't go around it.
Ireland, like, we don't do mental health talk.
Through is the only path.
No one is ever alone. There's somebody else out there.
Don't forget.
Experiencing the same thing as you.
But the places you feel most broken now.
You just gotta look for them.
Will one day be your greatest strength.
And when you find them, it's a great feeling.
And I'm suddenly feeling horrible about making that joke, but that's how far I will go to get a laugh because I am empty inside.
Ah, you're in the right place.
I am here with Neil Brennan, who is a return guest. I think you were on in like 2017, 2018. It was right after Three Mics came out.
Yeah, that would be 17.
Really enjoyed your new special. Neil's got a special out on Netflix called Blocks. And I assume that's got a double meaning.
What? I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, let me point that out for you. You do a wonderful job shitting on yourself, and I just want to tip my hat to you for...
Thank you so much.
Not only being a piece of shit, but recognizing it publicly.
Pure garbage.
Yeah, a lot of people... And one of the things I could tell is that you're rotten to your core, which a lot of people, they stop at the lungs, but you
go all the way.
Yeah.
Yep. I go all the way to the lowest chakra I can
which
get
I think
to.
Is the anus.
Yeah, yeah. It's the lowest one. So it's the core, my root. I go to my root chakra and all I work my way up.
Yeah. And did
crown.
You pick that up when you were in Venice?
No, we can't look. I can't. I don't want to blame that on anybody in particular. We can get into ayahuasca when you're ready. But, yeah, so thank you for recognizing my, my gifts.
In all seriousness, your special is great. I texted Neil after I watched it, and, great blend, obviously, of observation, you know, self-deprecation, and just a really nice blend of darkness and vulnerability, which I think can be a really hard balance to strike as a comedian, the cynicism and vulnerability.
It was easier on the special before Three Mics, because on Three Mics, it was easier because it was like segregated.
Yeah.
Like, here's where I'm funny, here's where I'm emo, and here's where I'm funny again. Yeah. So... this was a harder mix of, they had to live closer together.
Yeah.
But once you establish it, people are pretty sharp.
Did you?
And they can take more than you think they can.
Yes. And I think they're more patient between punchlines than we think they are as comedians.
For sure.
Because that part of our brain that's like, oh, they're bored because they're quiet. Never imagining.
I think it's the right instinct in a comedy club. But if you take them out of a comedy club and you take them out of like, if you don't have an opener, if they don't, if you kind of make the rules yourself, or
if
you
you're
just
not tainted by somebody talking about butt fucking a giraffe,
yeah, yes,
in front of you.
I mean, you call it tainting. I call it quality middle. So yeah, once you're, once they know what they're getting, I remember Chappelle, if I can bring up Chappelle in minute three of the podcast, one time when we were really young, like 18, 19, him saying, he's like, you know how I open with that longer joke about like Br'er Rabbit and all that stuff? He's like, I do that so that the audience gets used to having punchlines spread out more, which is like, really? Tell me more, 19-year-old
unbelievable
person who's like incredible then.
I think one of the greatest show business facts is that, and this is for the elders out there, is I believe Dave set the record for the lowest Star Search score ever.
That's not true.
No?
No, because he lost to, he beat my brother, Kevin Brennan, in a Small World event, and then he lost to a guy named Lester Berry, but he didn't have the lowest score. He just,
so that's a rumor.
Lost.
That's,
he just lost fair and square.
Did you ever do Star Search?
No.
When I moved to Los Angeles, I got an agent and I said, the only thing I don't want to do is Star Search.
And that was the only thing they got you.
First thing they got
me.
And of course I needed rent money.
Yeah.
So I agreed to it. But, you know, there's a really nice luxury when you have the occasional thing in show business that you don't give a fuck about. So I didn't give a fuck. So I would make up introductions that Ed McMahon would read just to hear them come out of his mouth. And
you wrote for it?
No, I was a stand up on it.
Okay.
And so they'd say, how do you want Ed to introduce you? And I was like, well, they're not going to fucking fact check this thing.
Yeah.
So Ed introduced me one time as, you may know him from Baywatch, as JoJo the Lotion Boy.
So how many, so it sounds like you had a bit of a run on Star Search. How many did you do?
I think I did four.
That's pretty
and
good,
then
dude.
Lost to Kevin James in the finals or semifinals.
What year, 92?
No, 94?
Great.
94. But it was one of the only things where I hated myself the more successful I was.
Well, it's not a good barometer.
It's a horrible barometer.
I did some talk shows last week, like late night talk shows. And you forget, like I'd done 5 or 7 podcasts leading up to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a talk show and it was like, oh, I forgot like the first date formality of this.
Yeah.
And it's also diminishing return to this point because, like, more people are going to hear me on Rogan than they are ever going to see me on a talk show.
It's the new Tonight Show.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, it, and they get, like, if you watch Rogan and you don't like me, fair. Like, right. Fair. Like, you saw who I am.
Uncensored.
Yeah. Like, you saw what I'm like. You saw what I'm like. I mean, it's not me doing comedy, but it's me being, like, engaging. So. So I'm not, but if you saw me on the Tonight Show and like I seem a little stiff, I was a little stiff because it's just not the most fertile environment for,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's like the comedy version of meeting your partner's parents.
Yeah. That's how it feels.
Yeah. So let's talk about the blocks. We touched on, when you were a previous guest, the shit show you come from.
Mm-hmm.
Tell the listeners again.
Youngest of 10 kids, alcoholic dad.
Who said on his deathbed,
didn't love us. I said, I don't think you loved us. And he was like, I didn't. Great. Thank you. So with that in mind, like, you know, tried to, so have spent my adulthood trying to, I told somebody the other day, I feel like the way I approach my emotional state is like a dissatisfied customer who's like, has called the 1-800 number and is like, yeah, put me in touch with somebody else. Like, you can kind of, I'll hold. And I'm just, I won't stop. Started with, therapy, and the, again, I don't know what I said last time, but my the thing I don't like about therapy is there's dozens of different kinds of therapy, but they don't tell you that. You just think it's like Freudian, the kind of shit you see in movies. So you just sit there and then you go like, oh, wait, there's CBT. There's just all these other modalities that they just don't tell you because it's a business thing where it's like a Volvo dealer isn't going to tell you you could get a Volkswagen. So they just want to keep you on the lot, even if it's not the most effective form for you. So
I think therapists that have, you know, kind of a one sheet about their approach when you're searching for a therapist can help with that.
I've never seen that.
Yeah. Yeah. When you do a search for therapists, you know, it'll say, you know, I focused on, you know, cognitive behavioral or
okay, I don't know anything.
Theory or,
I don't know anything. I'm a yes. total amateur.
Yeah.
It's like saying I do V8s, V6s. I have no fucking idea what you're talking about.
Well, I did experience what you're talking about with a therapist once who about 6 months into it, she kept asking, talking about archetypes. And after a while, I was like, I'm not digging this. You know,
well, I had my first original therapy talking about fucking dream analysis. I was like, lady.
Yeah, she did that as well.
I have the same dream every night. Lorne Michaels was mad at me. It's the same dream every night. We don't need to go over this. It's just a very, like, literal showbiz stress dream. That's right. It. So why are you? Well, maybe we should have. No, I don't want to. It's fucking useless. Anyhow, so I did that. I just got the feeling it's in my body. From talking about it in therapy, I was like, this is in my body. I can talk about this endlessly. It's fucking in my body. So I went to some somatic therapy. I just started
taking experiencing?
Yeah. Traumatic release exercises, somatic experiencing.
Nothing?
Huh?
Nothing?
No, I liked it. It was, I shook so much. I went to a different one. I went to an EMDR person and I started shaking around her. And she was like, your shaking's not really organizing.
What does that mean?
Like, people will shake and then it will sort of clear up. Uh-huh. Mine was never clearing up. It was just the same amount every time. I just did everything, right? And I kept like, yes, I'll hold. Yep, I'll try something else. I'll try something else. And you may be thinking like, well, you didn't give any of it a chance. I gave it all a chance. I gave it all like, I gave therapy a decade and a half until a therapist finally was like, maybe you should get married and have kids. I was like, what?
Why? Like, maybe that you should add more pressure.
Well, it was just like, not, that's not, what is that, Freudian? Where'd you hear that? Is that Jungian psychology? Like, because she had gotten married late in life and whatever. And she was like, she apologized, but it was kind of like, this is a fucking racket. So what happened? And then finally I ended up doing, I mean, I did meditation retreats. I did fucking TMS, which was actually helpful, transcranial magnetic stimulation. Did that in America. Then I went to China. I did it there.
Because you can get a stronger...
Yeah, stronger current, basically.
Yeah.
And...
I struck out on that. 50 sessions at the max thing. I even went temporarily blind in my left eye for about 15 seconds. And nothing.
Fuck. Yeah. Sorry, dude.
Yeah. It
stinks.
What did you feel from TMS and how long did it last?
TMS, I just felt sort of a little sunnier.
For how
long? In general. Years.
Yeah?
Yeah. It was helpful.
And I've heard that people can go back for, you know.
You can get upkeep.
Yeah. And why did you not choose to do that, or did you?
Well, I did. I considered China the upkeep. I think China, I went maybe 4 years after the original. And China, I think, helped. And then somebody sent me an article about ayahuasca, the Peruvian Amazonian plant mm-hmm. medicine, and you have to go off SSRIs to take that. So I did go off SSRIs, and I did it. And I've done ayahuasca probably 15 times in the last 2 years. And it's been, that's been hugely helpful. And also, and then I did DMT, the 5-MeO-DMT, Bufo Olivarius, which fucking destroyed me, but I did.
Temporarily or lasting?
5 months of like was not myself.
In a negative way?
Yeah. In a, I mean, 2 days. I can tell you the whole chronology.
Cheer it.
Pretty wild. Was in New York, was doing blocks off Broadway, and went to, I couldn't, my ayahuasca circles out here, and I was like, you know, DMT always sound, 5-MeO-DMT always sounded too severe to me.
It's an intense version of the, whatever, the ayahuasca molecule?
Ayahuasca, yeah, DMT is the active ingredient in ayahuasca. And, but you digest it through your stomach, so it's more like an edible, where edibles kind of hit people strongly. But it's the difference between smoking something and eating it. Gotcha. It's like, if you smoke it, it goes directly into your bloodstream, like immediately. Right. If you eat it, it's got it like it's filtered. Right.
Well, don't you eat ayahuasca or
you drink it? That's what I'm saying. You drink ayahuasca. So it goes to your stomach and therefore gets sort of like eased into your body. 5-MeO-DMT, you smoke and it's.
Oh, you smoke.
Blast
it
off. Yeah.
And to, you know, hold that thought. Remember where we are. One of the things that I'm told about doing an ayahuasca experience is it's very important to know the legitimacy of the people guiding you through it. And I don't know what is involved in saying this person knows what they're doing, you know, et cetera.
I've done it with 3 different practitioners and
all in the States or did you?
Yeah,
travel?
All in the States. Okay. One is excellent, who I go to all the time. One was just like, I call him a rickety shaman. He's just not, I had a really bad experience and he offered very little guidance. And another one is, was like, I did it in New York and it was just kind of like, all right, we're going to wrap it up. And it was kind of like, dude, I just drank. I'm still on the, yeah, we got to go. So it was like it, yeah, you, but I, you don't know until you're there is the truth. I mean, and also, the guy I did it with in New York was recommended. It just wasn't very good.
And I just want to interject at this point.
This is all ayahuasca, just FYI.
Right. And I got an email from a very, very concerned listener after I was talking about ayahuasca with a previous guest. And this guy essentially said, my son lost his fucking mind on ayahuasca and has not come back. You know, you have a responsibility to the people listening to your show to warn them of the dangers of this. Please don't promote this thing. And I understand that was his experience, his son's experience, but I feel an obligation to mention that there is danger
sure.
involved.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the antidepressants, people commit suicide on them. You know what I mean? Like these, when you're dealing with the mind, it's the Wild West. The ayahuasca sort of popularity wave is, I think, helpful. But I also am I've had a very bad experience on ayahuasca. I've had an incredibly bad experience on DMT. So ayahuasca, I've done since. And DMT, I wouldn't do if you offered me $1 billion with a B dollars. Literally would not do it. Not worth one. Neil, you could change lives. You could do. I'm sorry. I will not do that ever again.
Yeah, give me a snapshot of the worst moments.
The DMT I did on a Monday. And it was, you know, the DMT experience is fucking wild. And that Michael Pollan wrote about it in the book, How to Change Your Mind. And he said where DMT is the only plant medicine he did that he could not. I guess it's not a plant medicine. It's because it's toad venom. So the only medicine he did that he could make neither heads nor tails. Inscrutable. Could not. Didn't understand it. It took him to before the Big Bang, which is exactly where it took me. Imagine that. You inhale thing, and it's like a whippet in terms of, like, you're gone. Like, and you're gone. you're 3 seconds gone, transported.
And do you...
Your body basically passes out. Some people in the experience are in this other world, but are screaming, are writhing, are, you know, tensing their muscles. Like, you know, their body is having a live human experience, but their mind is elsewhere. They have no idea what their body's doing.
When I tried ketamine treatments...
Yep. I also did ketamine.
It was a combination of, you know, kind of going to another headspace where there was hallucinations, but I always knew I was on a cot in a doctor's office undergoing this treatment. So I was tethered. When you did the DMT...
I had that similar experience.
Was there any sense of being tethered, or were you completely...
I was not. I was in the reality of this before the Big Bang, white void. I was not even a person. I told somebody it was like drowning. My mind was drowning. I didn't know anything. I didn't have a thought. I didn't know how to breathe. I didn't know direction. I didn't know what sight was. I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything. I feel like I felt my first synapse form. Like clean slate terror. And people call it an ego death. Looking at it, I wouldn't say it was an ego death, because I was so disoriented, and I was trying to orient myself. There was a self there. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was trying to comprehend what was happening. It was like being dropped into this other world, and you don't know.
So
what
all the references you had gathered in your lifetime,
in my life as a human being, were gone.
Which in many ways is the opposite of ketamine, because ketamine, at least to me, was an intense mental exercise in making connections between things and seeing
patterns.
Yeah,
I think they can all do a bunch of stuff.
Right.
But this was just trying to comprehend this incomprehensibility. You know, that's a 25-minute experience. Slowly but surely, my human personality and consciousness kind of came back into me.
You came out after 25
minutes.
It's
slowly, and I was like pettiness would come in. And I'd be like, no, I'm not doing that anymore. Like, I felt like I could rebuild myself. Obviously,
I'm not doing what anymore?
Being petty. I'm not going to do that in this incarnation of me.
Gotcha.
But like, it's software, so it's just it's coming back. So that was like, you know, I inhaled at 8 and I was walking home at 9 in New York. And it was like, all right, that was like crazy, but manageable. That was on Monday. Saturday night, I'm doing my show in New York. The comedian Ryan Hamilton, buddy of mine, came, and it was super fun, and it was just great to do the show for him and hear him laughing. And it was like just a fun show. We're walking home, and I'm telling him, like, Ryan, who grew up Mormon, I'm going like, oh, I believe in God. I was an atheist before, and now I believe in God because of ayahuasca, which is a whole other issue. Mm-hmm. Not issue, but story. I was an atheist before I did ayahuasca, and then on my third ceremony, I was like, oh, I'm in the presence of God. Okay. God's real. Cool. I'm telling Ryan about it, and then I go... And as I'm telling him about it, I'm telling him about DMT, and I'm telling him about my experience. And as I'm talking about it, I kind of feel myself drifting back into it, like into the experience. Like, the term acid flashback is from olden times. And I would always go, what does that even mean? I was having basically, they call it in DMT, they call it a reactivation, which when you inhale it, I read a paper that said 70% of people have a reactivation. They don't tell you that. 70, like, dog, tell me that. And slowly but surely, I was like drifting. I tried to watch a documentary in my house, drifting. And I was like, I need to go to sleep because I got to like get out of this. Go to sleep, wake up the next morning, still drifting. And the next 2 days, I would say I was 40% human and 60% in this infinite void space. So I'm on a date and a coffee date, and like the right side of my vision is like turning to static, and I'm like my consciousness might be disintegrating.
That's got to be.
It's beyond. It's terror beyond anything. I would have paid for terror. Do you know what I mean? Like, I would have welcomed terror. This was so far past terror. This was incomprehensibility. This was, I had the thought, maybe I'm in God's imagination. Like, just shit that is cute as, like, a thing to think about during meditation, because you can't get there. I was there.
And couldn't leave there.
Yes. And at one point I thought I might have to kill myself.
To get out of this.
Yes. But I knew I couldn't, because I was just going to be heading into more of it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was so far past reasonable that it was like, my mind was drowning on incomprehensibility. I had an experience where, and I don't know if I dreamt this or...
Did you share this with the person you were on a date with?
No. No. What am I going to say? I just wanted to like stay engaged with a person, because I was like, this can't be bad, right? I knew I was just a friend of mine who I saw that day, like, said, you just seem really preoccupied. It was like right next to me, this thing, like, you know, we can drag you. No, it wasn't even menacing me. It was just existed, this other level of consciousness, like that to me was all right. So at a certain point, I don't know if I dreamt this or experienced it in the original DMT experience, but I was in the presence of the central creation force of the universe. And it was like a, like kind of an overhanging granite, black granite, infinite, couldn't see the top of it, but like overhanging. And we were at the bottom of it, and me and one other person. And I was like, we're both like, this is God. And then we both caught like a beam from the force, and it was like, what are you? What am I? What is anything?
Nameless, faceless person?
Yeah. I couldn't pick them out. Like, I don't know. It was just like a vague human. It was George Clooney. No, I'm kidding. So just a level beyond anything that you're, you know, it's like I told somebody I couldn't watch the Apple TV screensaver, like where they show nature, those like 4K mm-hmm. nature shots, couldn't look at them. So I was like, I can't look at this. It was too, I understood how old/young the earth was, and you're not supposed to, we have blinders on for a reason. When people go, oh, the mountain's 500,000 years old, and you go, that's crazy, nothing happens. I understood how old that was, and it wasn't that old to me based on where I was.
So why were these insights terrifying? Because under other circumstances, as you said, somebody meditating, those might be calming.
Because I said meditation, you get a 35,000 foot view. I had a 35 trillion foot view, where it was like, it wasn't your problems are small. It was, you're in a system that you is incomprehensible to you. Like, this central force is...
To your detriment?
It's terrifying. If you're in a thing that you can't understand... We can only understand so much of the world, right? Like, we have our little things, and we're doing a jigsaw puzzle, and we're the pieces in the thing, or like direction, or traffic lights, or like frames, for lack of a better term. I was shown or experienced some version of consciousness that was I believe, like, not for humans to see. Like, you're not, you can't comprehend this. And it felt like my brain was drowning. Like, you can't, like, you can't comprehend it. It's not, it's like the end of 2001 or something, but times 500.
Do you think, you know, being the child of an alcoholic and growing up where you grew up, you know, kind of the stereotype of that person is that control is very important, or at least a sense of control.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that factored into your experience of these thoughts, or is that me trying to
unpack it and get what I could from it? I mean, it was just kind of like, hey kid, you like patterns? Here you go.
Here's really the pattern.
And you can't comprehend it. It's not comprehensible. What are the odds I got that right? You know what I mean? Like, there's no way. I don't know. I don't understand why I was shown or why I experienced what I experienced. Mm-hmm. All I can say is it was fucking terrifying how in scale. Because it wasn't, the central creation force was not a person. It was like, it was a force. It's a force that could create a person and a river and a black hole and a nebula and a star and a toenail. And you know what I mean? Like,
were there any personality attributes?
None.
To?
That was the other thing that was terrifying. There was no humanity to it. Someone, again, this...
So cold and uncaring, kind of?
Not uncaring. It wasn't callous and it wasn't vindictive. It was just neutral. It just wasn't... didn't deal in human emotions.
Gotcha.
It just dealt in... Which was also really hard to deal with. Because somebody explained to me, there's a level... One word appeared to me in the original DMT 25-minute thing. And the word was samadhi, which is an Indian word, and it's a level of insight or it's a level of like a nirvana level. It's a level, I'm forgetting the word, but and I thought it was a breathing type, but it turns out it's a level of divine consciousness. It's the only thing that appeared in writing. Someone said that's the level I was on. And on that level, there's no human motion. It just feels static and stagnant.
Did that contribute to a feeling of aloneness?
Yeah, there was no activity. Yeah, it did.
A void of community?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or connection?
Yes, for sure. Apparently there are other levels of consciousness... why am I forgetting the term? But it's like the most obvious, one of the famous Hindu or Buddhist words that I'm forgetting. But yeah, it was really cold, like emotionally.
All right, I think I get a feeling for it now, and it sounds objectively.
Usually get the chills when I talk about it. I'm not now. I don't know why. But yeah, so it was like way beyond, and it took me, I got like 0.5% better every day.
Over the course of, what'd you say, 5 months?
Yeah. And at one point I went to the dentist, I got laughing gas, got thwarted back to the white void. Because I forgot. Like I forgot I shouldn't do any sort of...
With the sound of a drill.
Well, yeah, it wasn't even, they were like prepping me for the drill, but it was like I just, they were like, take a big inhale of like laughing gas and I'm just fucking transported. And I was like, all right, I literally was like, all right, can we take a pause real quick? And then had to start over. So it took me till, that was in November. I mean, realistically May, June, where I was like, okay, I'm myself again. Now, the punchline to it is I'm a better version of myself. I'm significantly less depressed. I'm significantly less, I think, less angry. I'm less, I can fall in love easier. I can like, I think I'm more open. And I also have just lighter energy to people's, like, I read lighter to people. Like, people I haven't seen in a while. It's like, what have you been doing? Which is great. But the process was nearly unbearable. Like, I'm going to have to kill myself. Like, that level of unbearable. We'll be right back after this. I mean, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. So the thing I said about, like, I kept saying, no, let me transfer me. I want to speak to the manager. And I kept getting transferred. And I got transferred to the right place.
Right.
But it was like, hey, you want to be different? We can do it. Let's go. It wasn't, I didn't get, I like, you know, I wasn't warned about what was possible. I mean, you hear, like, my son never came back and all that stuff. And, like, you just go, I'm not going to be fucking. But there were points where I was like, oh, I'm going to be a drug casualty. I'm going to be Sid Barrett. It happened once on ayahuasca and it happened on DMT. So I got in touch with the right department. But they really, I mean, it was Monday. It was the fucking WrestleMania.
This episode is sponsored by When Breath Becomes Air. When Breath Becomes Air by Paul Kalanithi is the exquisitely observed memoir of an idealistic young neurosurgeon attempting to answer the question, what makes a life worth living, as he deals with his own terminal cancer diagnosis. It's a stunning reminder to live while we are alive, a must-read for anyone in medicine, from a doctor-turned-patient. For healthcare workers, expand your view on patient care and the fragile beauty of our mortal lives through Kalanithi's unforgettable words. Some of the questions Kalanithi wrestles with in this book include, what makes life worth living in the face of death? What do you do when the future flattens out into a perpetual present? When the future is no longer a ladder towards your goals in life? What does it mean to have a child, to nurture a new life as another fades away? When Breath Becomes Air is a number one New York Times bestseller, Pulitzer Prize finalist, and named one of the best books of the year by the New York Times Book Review, People, NPR, The Washington Post, Slate, and more. When Breath Becomes Air is available wherever books are sold. Learn more at prh.com/breath.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So, if what would you say your anger was on a scale from 1 to 10 before it, and the same with your depression?
Anger. Ayahuasca helped me with anger. It helped me with misogyny. Ayahuasca was the thing that, and DMT, where I was like, it's in my body. Ayahuasca and DMT got into my body and changed my body. I'm not even kidding. Changed my, the way, if every person is a filter for existence or whatever, or reality, like, it changed my filter. It changed the way I metabolized information. It changed the way I metabolized interactions. I'm just different in my body. So anger is dissipated. It's not gone, but it's like not my number one response. And, I'd say out of 10, I was probably a 7, and now I'm probably a 3 or 4. So halved it.
And depression?
Depression. I had dysthymia. I just had like low grade dysthymia. So persistent, never ending. I'd say 6 out of 10. And now I'd say 1.
Wow.
Yeah.
What are some of the things?
But
go ahead.
I paid full price for the change.
What are some of the things, especially the subtle things, that you're able to take joy or at least feel?
I'm not quite to joy yet, but I am.
Appreciation?
Not there yet.
This is sounding less and less.
You know what? I'm worse than I've ever been. I'm kidding. It's a 7. No, but the heaviness is gone.
I gotcha.
So, like, there's heaviness. There's, like, a weighted blanket. That's gone. So I used to seem morose and intense, and now I think I just seem intense. Which is, like, great. Great. Now we'll take it from here. Now I'll keep. I have a spiritual life now, and I will pursue the changes that I would like within that spiritual life. And I will continue to drink ayahuasca, and I will continue to meditate, and I will continue to take antidepressants as needed, if need be. I will just continue my sort of, I always say depression and these things are like diabetes, or codependency is like diabetes. Like, you need to take insulin. You're going to need to do something consistently forever. And there's the point in people in when people get diagnosed and they're like, I'm gonna fucking do this forever.
It's cheating.
Well, there's the cheating. And it's also this is a pain in the ass.
Right.
And I just think neither one is the
yeah, maybe you need insulin.
True, but you need insulin.
Get over the fact that you need insulin.
Yep. You're going to need it.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's not a colostomy bag. It's a fucking. It's not even insulin, by the way. It's not even as inconvenient as insulin.
Right.
It's just a practice that you need to do.
And the diabetics that take insulin don't do it because they love needles.
No.
They do it.
I mean, the ones that...
Sure, the junkies. The trip to Dreamland.
Yeah, the ones who really love insulin. but yeah, they're not doing it. They don't love it. They don't, whatever. It's like, it's you don't have to be proud or ashamed. It's just neutral.
You mentioned a misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
Was it problematic before that? Was it low
I think
level?
It's basic male, American male comedy, cats and dogs, like in group, out group. Women are pains in the ass. Women are, you know what I mean? Just like the joke writing engine. They're different than us. And now I'm just feel more like they're different than us, and that's fine, and I have empathy, and I still notice it, but I'm not like, when are they going to change? I can change. It's just the way it is.
They just don't get it.
Yeah, and just accepting, because I've gotten in ayahuasca ceremonies such beautiful interactions with women in the circle that I'm just like, yeah, I can't. I gotta not be. I really need to see it from. I need to just be more. And it's even embarrassing to say that. It's embarrassing to talk about. It's like talking about racism or something. Right. But yeah, I think it's definitely dissipated. My racism's gone up. I'm kidding. but no, I think it's definitely just from my interactions with women and my being more open makes women more valuable.
So the mean voice in your head.
Yes.
I'm sure it's been there since you were a kid.
Yeah. We used to call it a New York attitude. And then we realized shortly thereafter, or not shortly after, we realized in the 2000s that it was a negative self-talk. But before that, it was like a cool...
Edgy.
Yeah, exactly. Smoke cigarettes, leather jacket. Cool guy who lived inside you. But then I realized at a certain point it was like hugely, I was cannibalizing myself.
When did you realize that?
I mean, well, I realized that I thought you were supposed to. And then.
Did it lead to success because you were uncompromising?
Or? You were uncompromising. You were pitiless. You were hard driving, you know what I mean?
Real.
Yeah, you were real. You were the, you know, pressure makes diamonds and all that stuff. But it also makes suicide. So, I just realized, like, this is a way. I wrote it. I literally wrote it down and was like, I cannot show this to anyone because my friends would be mad if they saw me talking to myself like this. So it
and what
kinda,
are some of the things that you told yourself and what are some whatever, of the things you tell yourself?
Any department you can.
Romance, business.
Literally work, comedy ability, your body, your digestive tract, your hair, your eye color, your jaw shape, your teeth, your hands, your fucking income, your just endless comparing and despairing and like fucking endless without wake up, go to sleep thinking about it, wake up thinking about it, like start the tape. So
has anything helped with that?
Cognitive behavioral therapy, when I saw just the list of like negative thought styles, I was like, shit. Like,
that's my family.
Yeah, that's my inner monologue. So catching yourself, again, it's hard. You got to be vigilant, but catching yourself doing it is really like a helpful thing.
One of the things that a therapist helped me with through CBT was the phrase, what are the facts on the ground?
Like, I have reality dysmorphia about my place, my accomplishments, my body, my teeth, my jaw, my hands. Like, it's all wrong.
And do you ever wonder how childhood trauma has affected that, or you just think you're wired that way?
I talk about it in the show. When you're isolated, I was isolated as a kid, even though it was a big family, I just felt sort of alone, and I would get like sent to my room and be by myself being like, where the fuck is everybody? You start to think it's your fault. And that's what happened to people during the pandemic. Everyone's isolated. They think it's their fault that your body doesn't know why you're isolated. Your body thinks you got rejected by the tribe. So your body's like, you're fucked up. You fucked up. You need to improve. It's a good mechanism within us, like in theory, but mm-hmm. it once you weaponize it, it's fucking unstoppable. So that's where CBT, I mean, I'd like to say that DMT made it better. I think it just made it vaguer and also like the dips, the sort of free fall spin outs are shorter. They're the troughs are shallower. They're just 2 hours instead of 2 days. So there has been a bit of relief in that regard. I have actual therapy in 2 minutes.
Oh, okay.
So
no worries, buddy.
We could also, I could do it and we could resume.
No, that's, you're dead to me.
I love it. So I don't know if this was helpful. What I would say is, my advice, if you're asking, is, and you're not, just try shit. Just don't stop saying, yeah, you can put me on hold.
Couldn't agree.
I'll try another thing. Yep, yes. I'll try it. You may get more than you bargained for, but you will get, you're going to get, you can change. It's just fucking.
You can't control the circumstances.
Yeah, you're not going to be in.
And isn't that the very definition of, and I couldn't agree more. And isn't that the very definition of help, is that you're surrendering control and trying something that is, you know, perhaps outside your comfort zone.
And there's risks involved.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is there is risk, but or you can stay miserable.
So what we're saying is join a biker gang, see what happens.
Goodbye.
Thanks, Neil.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Many thanks to Neil. And taking time out of his day to talk about the collapse of his brain publicly. Fuck, that sounded so intense. So intense. I've had bad acid trips, and that sounds way, way worse than anything that I've ever experienced. So, as I said, no surveys. We'll be back with surveys next week. And I just want to say, if you're out there and you're feeling stuck, just remember, help help is all around. We just got to find our people and ask for it and never forget that you are not alone. And thanks for listening.
Everybody I know is bizarrely beautifully
everybody
fucked up
I know
in some
is
weird
way.
Bizarrely beautifully
everybody
fucked up in some weird way.
Bizarrely beautifully everybody fucked up in some weird way.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. Like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.